Good evening and welcome everybody. I'm Bill Hall. I am the chair of the Board of Commissioners. This is Wayne Belmont, the County Legal Counsel, and I'm going to give a very quick overview of kind of the history of what has led us to this point and what our overall goals are. And then Wayne is going to walk us through the details of the proposal, and then the big goal is to hear from you, comments, questions, suggestions. So as you may already know, up until this point, the county has never done any regulation of vacation rentals in the unincorporated areas whatsoever. You know, Lincoln City, Newport, and Yahats have had various licensing and regulation programs in place for many years, but the county has never gone there. About 20 years ago, when Rhodes End was still part of the unincorporated area of the county, and you may know Rhodes End has a pretty heavy concentration of vacation rentals, the Homeowners Association there approached the three county commissioners who were in place at the time and basically petitioned them to legislate vacation rentals in Rhodes End out of existence. And as both a practical matter and a legal matter, the county does not have authority to do that. The commissioners said, sorry, no, we can't do that, but we would be willing to talk about some kind of a licensing program. That wasn't good enough for those folks, so basically the matter dropped. And I've been a commissioner now. This is my 12th year. I would say in the first 10 years, I would get occasional complaints, and I would hear sometimes the other commissioners would get complaints related to vacation rentals, but over the last 2 years, it really escalated dramatically. And as I was saying, I think before we got started, the vast majority, but not all of them, have come from the Glenedon Beach, Lincoln Beach area, and I think because of the concentration of residential development there and the number of vacation rentals operating there. And it's the same sort of complaints the previous board heard from Rhodes End: excessive noise, parking issues, trash. So basically quality of life issues. And that was when we began doing research and began moving towards the draft ordinance that we're now considering tonight. One of the questions that has come to us during these discussions that I would like to address up front, you know, people saying, well, don't you already have ordinances in place to address all of these things? And yes, we do, but our ability to hold someone accountable is limited. I think as we talked about at the Lincoln City meeting and also the Waldport meeting, we've kind of come up with a hypothetical guest we call Joe Idaho. Now, if Joe Idaho comes and stays at a VRD, gets cited by the sheriff's office for a noise violation, and then never comes back to Oregon, that really doesn't have much impact. But if an owner or a manager has a consistent problem with not holding their guests accountable, then this gives us a mechanism to deal with it. And there is a steadily escalating, you know, an informal, then a more formalized complaint procedure, and then the very most severe, I would say the most severe option possible, ultimately is revocation of the license to rent the property. But the hope and expectation is we will rarely, if ever, reach that point. I think that's the essentials, so maybe I'll hand off to Wayne right now.
Thanks, and I'm going to try and keep this one pretty short. I think some of you have already listened to the presentations we've made in other communities, and what we're really trying to do is hear from you. We want to hear your concerns, your comments, you know, what you think about what we're doing and how we might do it better. And so that's the opportunity you have tonight to inform us on what's going on. I just want to really point out that what we're doing here is a business licensing program. I want to make it real clear, this is not a land use ordinance or a land use regulation. Some entities, especially some of the cities, have attempted to address and gone fairly far in their attempts to address the issue of vacation rental dwellings through land use ordinances and implementing provisions. This is not, and I want to just make sure that's eminently clear. It's a business licensing program. We've put together a draft ordinance, and I think you've all got copies of that and an opportunity to take a look at that. And this is the last of our public forums before we come back to the board and see what the next steps are. I would like to describe, though, what the purpose of the licensing program is, what we're really trying to do. And it's basically to establish some operating standards for the rental of short-term dwelling units. I'm going to read right from it because I think it really says it well. Establish operating standards for rental of short-term dwelling units through creation of a business licensing program that allows operation of such rentals in a manner that respects and protects the livability of the neighborhoods in which these rentals are located. And that's a pretty good statement of what we're trying to accomplish with this program. The manner in which we do that, of course, is through requiring a license for dwelling units which are rented for a period of up to 30 consecutive days. We're not reinventing the wheel with this thing. We've actually looked at models from other communities, kind of pulled together those elements that we think are most effective in attempting to address this from our perspective here. We do establish the Lincoln County Licensing Authority, which will be the arm of the county, which will administer and enforce the licensing requirements. And right now, the way that's working, the way we've got it envisioned here, is it'll be administered by the Lincoln County Sheriff's Office. We chose the Sheriff's Office because they issue permits and licenses probably more than any other organization.
Concealed carry, burglar alarm permits.
But they have very good experience at both dealing with the permitting process here, but also very good experience with enforcing these provisions. And they're going to do that in cooperation with the Lincoln County Treasurer's Office. And, of course, I'm sure my office at some point will be involved in this, County Council's office. So what are the standards we're looking to do? Bill indicated really the areas we're trying to address here in this. And those standards include quiet time provisions. We've got provisions for compliance with the noise ordinance. Garbage service. That is an area that we've heard a lot of complaints about. Parking is an issue that we're going to try and address here by identifying the parking on at least an initial basis here, what people are going to provide for their vacation rental dwellings, and then see if we can get some additional requirements in place for new dwellings as they come on board. And then limits on occupancy. And there we're establishing both a limit for a sleeping area, which will be defined, and then a maximum occupancy of these vacation rental dwellings. A key feature in this licensing program is that the owner will be required to designate a contact person. The way we initially drafted this was that contact person would be provided by the owner. Could be the owner, him or herself, could be anybody else. What we will ask you to comment on that particular provision, because we've heard a pretty strong indication from people, is that they would like that contact person to actually be a local person here within the county, that's much more effective. And the contact person plays the role of being a conduit for complaints or concerns that are expressed by surrounding property owners. They can go to that person and say, you know, the occupants of your VRD are... it's midnight and they're partying very loud. You know, the contact person then can make it, actually will have a responsibility under our licensing requirements to respond to that complaint and deal with it. And so we're thinking the most effective way to do that is to have a local contact person. But we want to hear from you. We want to hear what you think about that particular tweak to the ordinance.
Can I add a little more to that, Wayne? You know, the one thing we talked about was, it could be the owner, it could be a management company, or, like we said, we had another hypothetical, say, someone who lives in Philomath and is going to handle the booking and management of their property from Philomath. But if they contracted with, say, a local security company to handle those responses, just so there was somebody available who could respond within the time frame, which I think is still up for adjustment, we were talking about a requirement anywhere from maybe 20 minutes to perhaps 1 hour.
Right.
And that there's somebody who could respond within that time frame.
That's not a question we'd ask you to. What is a reasonable time frame in which to have the owner's representative make contact with the party that's causing the problem? There's a number of provisions in here that talk about what the information on contact, where the phone number is, who that will be provided to. We're actually having them provided to neighbors within a certain radius. We're talking right now of 250 feet. And if there's a change in the contact person, you'll need to contact the people within 250 feet again. We can help with who those people are at the time we do an application. They're also going to have to post a sign outside that gives the phone number. So if you don't have that phone number and you got a complaint, you know where that contact person is. And these are, again, things that we're seeing in some other codes out there and ways in which that you can have that relationship, good relationship between the vacation rental owner and his or her neighbors. Bill indicated, we're saying that you have to make contact within a reasonable time. We want to talk a lot about what that reasonable time frame is and hear from you on what those time frames might be. So what do we do? How do we deal with the complaints? What's the process for doing it? We're starting off with, it's a multi-tiered kind of process, but we really start off with saying the best way to deal with it is between the neighbors. And so we really ask for an informal resolution. By having the contact person identified at the front end, we think most of the complaints are going to be handled that way. That, you know, people, I think that's one of the issues that we hear a lot about is when there are problems, it's not always problems, but when there are problems, we don't know who to call. We don't know who to contact. You know, we end up calling the fire department, we call the sheriff's department, you call everybody, you know, to respond to it. This will create a system in which it's neighbor to neighbor. And we think there are a lot of responsible VRD owners out there who actually don't want to have these kinds of issues, want to know when things are going on like this, want to be able to respond to it. This will give them an opportunity. We're going to allow that at least an initial attempt to informally resolve these issues so they never reach our level. But provide the mechanism for providing that communication. If, however, that doesn't work, we're going to have a formal resolution process beyond that in which complaints can be made to the county, to the licensing authority. And again, because it's the sheriff's office, a person in the sheriff's office who has some experience handling these things will be involved, you know, we'll have somebody who can make responses to these things. And we'll try and resolve it again between the parties, initially between the parties through the sheriff's office. And if that doesn't work or doesn't come to the satisfaction of either the VRD owner or the complainant, then we can move it up the ladder. And they can make a written determination whether there was a violation of our operating standards or not. And the key of having a written determination is that if you have three determinations within a year that you're violating standards, you risk the possibility of having your license revoked or not reviewed the next time around. That this is not the only enforcement action we can take. We can take other actions if there are other violations of our codes and respond to those things. But this process of making these determinations, I think, is really going to put some ability to enforce the standards out there into the code that we can follow up on. And obviously, you know, the key to this whole thing is that you cannot operate a VRD in Lincoln County unless you hold a valid license. And if you, you know, you got to apply and get the license in the first place to qualify and meet the standards out here. But if you fail to meet those standards, then you're not going to be able to get a license and you won't be able to operate. Enforcement of that will be fairly simple in circuit court. I mean, it'd be a simple question to the judge, do you have a valid license or not? And when you don't, then there's all kinds of mechanisms we have in place to either cease the operation of that particular facility as a VRD or impose other fines or whatever enforcement we want to do. So one of the questions we have been asking is, some people were concerned that we say that you have to have three violations, written determinations of violations. And I should note there are some appeals processes available. It's not just a simple, while the sheriff's office can make an initial determination, so people can appeal those determinations up the ladder. So we do have some provisions for appeals of those. But there was some concern that we said three violations within a year's period of time, and some felt that that was too lenient. And we'd like to hear on that. You know, what do people think about that? We would like to at least, we think it's workable in that way. And so we would like to at least initially put the ordinance out with that as the mechanism for doing enforcement. And if that runs into problems, if it's not effective doing it that way, then we can always tweak that later and fix that. I think, again, one of the things that we are going to do, one of the things we heard is interesting. We heard from a number of other operators of these kinds of facilities, lodging operators. One of the concerns they expressed to us was that they think there are a number of these VRDs who are subject to our transient room tax and they aren't paying, and they want a level playing field. If they're out there with their motel or hotel, you know, collecting the transient room tax, they think that all these VRDs, we do collect from a number. We try, but we do not have, you know, full-time people out here, you know, looking around and making sure we do it. So one of the things that will be tied into the license is the requirement that you complete and comply with our transient room tax provisions here. And your failure to do so is another reason for revocation or denial of a license.
And if I could just interject, I mean, like when Rhodes End came into Lincoln City, we were collecting from several properties in Rhodes End, but the city did tell us that they did find some that were not paying the room tax. So, again, the level playing field. And I think when this first came up, somebody called to my attention a rental in Glenedon Beach, which has its own web page and was specifically advertising, you know, our rates are lower because we don't collect the county room tax. Not smart, I don't think, but that was their choice.
And then, of course, the other component of this is there will be a fee associated with this. There will be an initial fee for getting the license and then an annual renewal fee. And that will help us pay for the administration and enforcement side of this particular process. So the kinds of questions and the concerns we had, let me try and highlight a couple of the areas that we did. One was the question of a local contact person. And we'd like to hear from people if that's, if they have an opinion one way or the other on having a local contact person. Second thing was the garbage service. What we did do is we actually say that the owner is required to provide and maintain adequate garbage service. And I think we want to tweak the definitions of that a little bit. And we were hearing some things back from that, what that actually means. But we did provide for an alternative. And some of the people were saying that a lot of the response was no. The alternatives don't work. You know, if you let the person say, I'm going to come over from Corvallis and pick it up once a week and doing that, that's not going to work. That we should just simply say mandatory, you have to have garbage service, you know, some kind of, an adequate level of garbage service for the use of the particular facility. So that's something we want to hear what people have to say about that and whether that's been an issue that they want to do. Parking, I want to be very upfront. Frankly, I think this is the most difficult issue to enforce and to deal with, is parking. Just because we're dealing with existing houses, existing roads, it's really hard to create new parking, you know, and those kinds of things. But I think we've got a way to at least try and identify that. We're going to make it real clear that if tenants of or occupants of a VRD violate existing parking regulations, parking in fire zones, that kind of thing, that is a potential violation of the license requirement, the operating requirements, and that could lead to further enforcement action if the tenants are doing that or regularly engaging in that kind of activity. So we want to make sure people are respecting the parking regulations that we do have in place. And we're going to try and have people identify where it is they're going to provide the parking. You know, I think too often, one of the number one complaints we hear is you get, 25 people going into one of these places and parking all these vehicles out there, and there's just no place to park. So that's an issue that we're going to try to address here. And I think that was probably the key issues that we were looking for feedback.
What about maybe the timing on initial licensing and then when a property is sold? And we talked about, like, say, if this goes into effect, say, July 1st, that we give people some kind of a grace period, maybe
we'll
60,
build in a period,
90 days,
yeah, a period of time in which to obtain the license.
And then the question came, what if somebody is purchasing an existing rental, which, of course, already would have rent bookings out, several months in advance, and again, they'd have
a period
some
of time,
sort
grace
of
period.
Grace period to obtain the license.
To obtain the license. So we'll have to work out some of the mechanics of that process. But that's kind of the long and short of what we're attempting to do. And I've said enough already. It's your opportunity to talk to us and tell us what you think about this. So we're going to open the floor to anybody. Sure.
My name is Dave Niepholm. I'm an attorney in Portland.
Okay.
And I'm actually involved with the SAM residence, which I believe you received the correspondence from Wendy Kellington, who's another attorney for SAM. So I want to be sure that both the April 22nd letter and the April 28th letter are in the record.
Yes.
And just to give you a little bit of context, I'm in Portland. I have my second home is in Lincoln City. Next door neighbor to me is a VRD, and there's probably 15 VRDs that I get the notices for in terms of to contact people with regard to my beach house. But my concern and Sam's concern is actually on two points, two to three points, the specific language in this ordinance, which is very problematic. And I think the language of the ordinance needs to be changed, not on any of the points that you've mentioned, but on several others. The first and I think mandatory change is because of ORS 215.130, and I think you need a new paragraph in here that says existing lawful uses shall not be barred by this ordinance pursuant to ORS 215.130 or some other similar language, because 215.130 says the county cannot bar existing lawful uses with a new ordinance. And so a simple paragraph adding that language would go a long, long way to avoiding the problem, which the litigation problem, where someone is saying you're in violation of this ordinance, but the ordinance can't be applied because of the existing lawful use. Simple solution, just a language change, but very, very, very important. Okay. And the other clause that Ms. Kellington, myself, the SAMs have a huge problem with is the language of section 8.6. Which is the limits on occupancy. Now, there's two points on the limits to occupancy, which are the language of that ordinance is problematic. The first one is particularly addressed by Ms. Kellington's letter of today, which the first sentence refers to a number of three persons per sleeping unit. And I think that's just a poor drafting issue.
Sleeping area.
Well, thank you, sleeping area. I appreciate that. Because sleeping area is not, does not exist in a single family dwelling. Sleeping area is defined, okay, rooming house, but a sleeping area is specifically defined as an area that is not used with full services. And it's typically a separate sleeping area, as opposed to a bedroom within a dwelling. Because a bedroom within a dwelling is, and Ms. Kellington actually gives you a lot of citations for it and the definitions, is actually what we're talking about here. We are not talking about sleeping areas. And so that should actually be bedrooms, three persons per bedroom. And we don't have any problem with the concept of three persons per bedroom as a limitation on the number of people, plus the two additional persons, and that seems appropriate. The sentence that is very, very problematic, though, and is a litigation creator, is the last sentence that says, notwithstanding the foregoing, no more than 16 persons shall occupy the short-term rental at any one time, consistent with the limitation contained the, she was Mr. Mewert there obviously, or a constructional specialty code for lodging houses. There's so much wrong with this last sentence that I'm going to start at the rear and then come up to the substance. And that what the solution is to eliminate that sentence entirely. Let me first say that the reason for the ordinance in the first place need to address issues of noise, parking, trash, things of that nature. You've already addressed those. So the issues that you're concerned about, noise, parking, trash, are addressed in other provisions. The number of people is not the issue with regard to either noise, parking, or trash. You can have noise, parking, or trash with one person, two people, three people. You don't need 16 people or 17 people, and there's no difference between a 16-person in a home versus a 17-person in a home that makes 16 a rational, reasonable, legal, under federal and state law, which I'll get to in a minute, restriction on use. So that the reason that you want this ordinance, such things as noise, parking, and trash, are addressed in other things, not by total occupancy. Next, the Oregon Specialty Code, Structural Specialty Code, well, first of all, lodging houses. There's a reference to lodging houses in this statute. Lodging houses is a different concept and provision than a dwelling house, than a dwelling. A lodging house has, for instance, sleeping areas. But again, the sleeping area, as expressed by Ms. Kellington more eloquently than I, is one that is similar to a boarding house where you have an individual bedroom locked off separate, and some, but not all, facilities like bathroom or kitchen. But if you have bathroom, kitchen, and bedrooms all combined, you do not have a sleeping area, and you have bedrooms, and you have a dwelling, you do not have a lodging house. If you construe bedrooms that are as part of an entire structure with kitchen and bath facilities to be sleeping areas, it is impossible in this county to have a legal structure of any type over five bedrooms that is as a dwelling. It would have to be every dwelling over five bedrooms would be a lodging house, and you couldn't have any rentals at all, because by definition you'd be defining yourself out of the dwelling provisions, and that's just a misreading of what a sleeping area is and the lodging house is. So you're confusing apples and oranges by referring to the lodging houses here, and that creates huge problems, and we don't want to get into those huge problems. And the easy way to around it is, this bedroom's not sleeping areas. These are dwellings, not lodging houses. Then we go to the key thing, which is, before we get to the key thing, Oregon Specialty Code does not restrict the number of persons or the number of bedrooms in a dwelling. That is not in the Oregon Specialty Code. We have attached the email from the state building code enforcer. It's one of Ms. Kellington's letters acknowledging that there's no restriction on number of people in the specialty code. So then we go to the first part of that, which is 16 persons maximum. Okay. Huge problem with this. Number one, both the Federal Housing Act, which is 42 U.S.C. 3601 to 3619, and Oregon Code, the anti-discrimination statute, 659A, 421, sub 2 and sub paragraph F, both say, federal law and state law, you cannot discriminate in housing based upon familial status. And Ms. Gunton has a lot of the case law that documents it. What you you can impose reasonable rules to address specific concerns you have, such as noise, parking, and trash. But you can't set a firm number that isn't based upon something that is a reasonable, rational basis that supports it. The first part of the paragraph already does that. Three persons per should be bedroom as opposed to sleeping area. Three persons per bedroom. If you look at the rules the FHA issues to its own staff, it says you shouldn't even have a set number of people per bedroom because it makes a difference whether this is a big bedroom or a little bedroom. That if, in terms of seeking a violation of the familial status, you have to determine what is reasonable for the actual site. But I think the three persons per bedroom is inherently reasonable and fine, plus the two people that you already have in the ordinance. So I'm not objecting to the first part of subsection 6, but I am saying that you should delete entirely the last sentence of subsection 6, because if you don't, there are, well, first of all, it's in conflict with itself, because it refers to things that are not true. You're in conflict with state law, you're in conflict with federal law, and I think the law is absolutely clear that, and like the reading the Fair Housing Council of Oregon on their website has a nice sentence. It says, overly restrictive occupancy standards can have a disproportionate effect on families with children and are therefore illegal. I don't think that concept of law is at all in question. And so a set maximum housing or maximum occupancy doesn't meet the purposes of the ordinance, is illegal under federal and state law, and should just be eliminated. And if it isn't, then you're not only subjecting the county to claims, but every owner who complies with the county ordinance is subject to a claim from the customer who says, what, I can't bring my 17-member family to the site, even though there's room in the house for it? You've just violated federal and state law. So, and by the way, those lawsuits are not fun and they're not cheap, because there's attorney fee clauses, so that the claimant, the family from Idaho Joe, can suddenly cost the homeowners, and probably the county to be named in there too, for not only the inconvenience of not having a weekend at the beach, but $40,000-$50,000 attorney fee claim in that lawsuit. So eliminating that sentence, it's just one sentence to the ordinance, leaving the reasonable rules that you have in other sub-provisions makes complete sense. And essentially, if these two provisions are change, the adding the ORS 215-130 provisions and eliminating this, referring Section 8 from sleeping area to bedroom and eliminating the last sentence, and Ms. Killington and I, as attorneys for the SAMs, are not going to be here
litigating
this ordinance.
I'll just say I respectfully disagree, and we can move on and hear other comments. I appreciate your comments.
And I think we will present this to the full Board of Commissioners and have an opportunity for them to hear this and discuss. And I don't know where we as individuals or as a board will fall on
but
that.
But this is where we need the information and the comments. I appreciate that. I do.
With your written communication and this, you've laid out your case, I think, very clearly, very thoroughly. That's appreciated.
Go.
Yes.
Okay.
My name is Caroline Bauman, and I'm with the Economic Development Alliance of Lincoln County. I'm here. I had a couple of issues, but after being here and listening to your presentation so far, maybe one more. I have not read the proposal itself yet, but I just have some general issues that I'm interested in. But as far as the one that I just picked up, I wanted to throw out some language to see if this was helpful. And that is, removal of garbage shall be done as a part of house cleaning at the end of occupancy. So having the house cleaner actually remove garbage, I mean, you don't want a garbage company to come in if it's overflowing after less than a week. So whenever the housekeeper is there is when the garbage should be removed. And it might be possible to have that language. The other thing that occurred to me as things that you might want to pay attention to, I mean, I hate to think the worst of people or go to the worst case scenario, but when you have the kind of situations like Airbnb or situations where you have an owner of a property who has absolutely no knowledge about the occupant of their property, you want to have things that would, you know, be protecting the public from a drug manufacturing type of problem. So you might want to talk about odors, environmental hazards, and that you should not have any of those things present, as well as just...
Interesting.
As far as the Economic Development Alliance of Lincoln County, we're extremely concerned about supply issues in the housing marketplace for our workforce. One of the things I wonder as it is very understandable that the owner of a property is going to get the most revenue possible out of that property, and you always get more revenue renting by the night than by the month. Not always, but in certain cases where you have oceanfront, ocean view.
Sure.
The supply and demand issue as people become aware of things, you know, through Airbnb, for example. I'm using them as an example. Mm-hmm. I have nothing against that company.
Sure.
But that's just an example of how the market has changed. So very concerned about the availability of rental units for people that are not low income. I'm talking about middle income and high income. But they prefer rent. Mm-hmm. And so the supply issue is something that we're very concerned about all over Lincoln County. The last issue that I wanted to bring up, and this is related, and you've already addressed it, is the fairness issue with regard to the collection of room tax revenue. The room tax, when it comes to online shopping and the type of companies where, not companies, I'm talking about where owners are directly working with the renter, but they're doing it online. So, you know, having the licensing is going to improve the situation that is a fairness issue that I'm absolutely certain have not been collecting room tax revenue in the unincorporated area from transient room rentals, and I know that and some of that money is used for economic development, which is why, you know, I'm so
sure
aware of this issue, and the fact that it's been on the honor system all these years has been so problematic for me. So very supportive of the type of ordinance that you guys are working on. I just think it's very, I do feel bad for the hotel and motel owners who are being, they have occupancy limits. They don't allow as many people as can fit into a unit to be in that unit. So just keeping in mind the fairness issue so that our hotel and motel industry is also just as vital and just as paying the appropriate amount of room tax that they should be.
Yeah, that was something that was brought out at the Waldport meeting from a couple of motel owners who were in attendance. You know, I'd already thought about the fairness issue on the room tax, but really they pointed out how their industry is really pretty heavily regulated in a lot of ways by the state, and they realized that this doesn't bring the VRD industry into the same level of regulation by any means, but still, again, they said they appreciated it just because of the leveling of the playing field issue.
Right. It should be considered an industry and not somebody with a spare bedroom or somebody with a house that they're, you know, moving towards occupying. It's an industry where people are making a reasonable profit, and it's a job.
And it is part of the tourism industry, which is one of the foundations, as you well know, of our local economy. And so I think we're looking for a way, and we know that this capacity, especially in the months of peak demand, is absolutely necessary to satisfy the demand for lodging capability here. And yet it is also coexisting with full-time year-round residents, and so again we're trying to find that reasonable balance between supporting an industry, regulating an industry, and protecting neighborhood quality of life.
I appreciate that, and you know, my question would be because it's so difficult to resolve this supply issue for our renters, is you know, once we have this, once we have a real multitude of vacation rentals, where are the housekeepers cleaning those units going to live?
That is a good question, and you know, I don't know if that's really within the scope of what we're trying to do here. But that's a reasonable question, you know, because you know, I even had people who know all my work on housing. Somebody said to me, "What? You're going to license vacation rentals? Don't you realize how that's impacting the supply of year-round housing?" And I said, "You've got to remember, this is, people have a legal right to rent out their properties, whether it be long-term or short term, and that's an existing right already. And so certainly, you know, beyond saying, you know, that's something we acknowledge and that we're working on through other venues, but it is a supply and demand problem that just does seem to be getting worse all the time for a lot of reasons.
Any other comments?
Yes.
Yeah, my comments are on the very, very practical level. I'm in a homeowners association in South Beach, and a president's association, so a lot of all the complaints come through me. And we're seeing, it's a small neighborhood, it's Surfland.
Oh, yes.
And so the streets are kind of narrow, and it's always been a residential area. And we're seeing, like in the last 10 years, we've gone from one vacation rental to now we have eight. And there's no sign that it's going to, it's a nice neighborhood, and there's no sign it's going to slow down. And so we're looking at, and we're kind of a go-along-get-along neighborhood, but the residential feel, quality of life, is being seriously impacted by people who are on vacation. You know, they don't have any ownership of the neighborhood. They don't know us. So we have issues with, basically, we don't have so much parking issues because our road district can control on-street parking. But what we have is noise and no accountability for stopping that noise, and speeding. And then people walking their dogs without picking up the dogs. So there's just this, you know, the kind of thing that you wouldn't think of doing in your own neighborhood, they're doing when they come to our neighborhood. And we just want some help from the county so that we have some...
Well, hopefully this will provide some more
tools. So walk me through, this is important, because walk me through the initial informal complaint system. Now, I think 15 minutes is plenty of time to get the noise stopped. The neighbor makes a call to the contact person. The contact person makes a call to the person renting the dwelling, and it should stop. But when you say an informal neighbor to owner or neighbor to manager situation. So I don't happen to live next door to a troubling property right now, but I hear about it. So let's pretend I live next door to a troubling, noisy property.
It's 1:30 in the morning, and Joe yes. Idaho is yes. drinking and in the
yes.
yard,
yes.
screaming,
yes.
whooping,
yes.
and
yes.
yelling.
So I call the contact person. The contact person stops the noise, but it happens every single weekend. What is the, when you talk about informal, where is the...
Well, that's the resolution of that. If it keeps going on, if it's a recurring or frequent thing, then you're obviously not going to be feel that you're getting the response that you need to it. So you can make a written complaint to the county then at that point.
So
and you need to, frankly, we put some onus back on the property owner, to keep, meet the regulations, but also on the neighbor to document things, to keep
certainly.
That information.
You can't just have some cranky.
No, and we're not going to respond if there's one complaint, every 3 months, and that's being resolved. That's not going to be...
And that's my next question. When you talk about, like three violations mm-hmm. might cause the license to be revoked, are these the I'm sure it's in here, but is the definition of violation unresolved issues?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. That's fair.
Mm-hmm.
It can't just be three complaints. It has to
no,
be.
Not
right.
just three complaints.
Yeah.
Because we do know that sometimes, with all kinds of other land use and ordinance, sometimes neighbor-to-neighbor disputes, they do try to use government mechanisms
yeah.
to...
So speeding isn't in here, but let's say I live next door to, a place that's filling up on Friday night, and they're whizzing in and out of the
mm-hmm.
neighborhood. Can that be a trigger for calling somebody and being part of the...
That's not currently in here, no.
I know. I'm requesting
no.
that.
Is there a way?
Yeah. It's not actually done on the property. You see, there's a huge...
Yeah. It's a difficult
yeah,
thing when you're on a public road doing that.
Yeah. If it was happening on the property. But
yeah. I don't know. I that's a difficult one to deal with. It's a
it
difficult
is,
one.
Is,
and frankly, I would tell you that part of my response would be that happens in residential neighborhoods, too. No, it doesn't matter whether it's a BRD or not. The public road speeding
it is a difficult issue. It does not.
If you have private roads, put in speed bumps or ask the county to put it on the public road.
Which is a whole different issue of putting traffic calming devices on public roads is a real, it's
yeah.
a real
but
problem.
But if you've got private roads, that's something you could consider.
If anything at all can be put in here as you tweak the language to tighten up the sense that the renters need to respect the residential
well, that's the purpose
of
it. Yeah. And I think that's
anything,
the idea.
Anything at all that can tighten
yeah.
that up would be.
Yeah.
And
well,
I think as a homeowner in Lincoln City with BRDs right next to me, I don't rent my place out up there frequently. And the bottom line is the ordinance is not a bulletproof vest that solves everything.
Exactly.
But it is definitely a mechanism that has been improved. And the answer is, I've called my neighbor's manager often enough that the matter usually gets solved, not always perfectly to my satisfaction, but it's much better.
Just what's here
yeah.
is so much. I mean, it's just.
We think it'll make a difference.
I hear
what you're saying.
Just having this is night and day. Just the
right.
licensing is
mm-hmm.
wonderful.
I mean, like one of the stories we heard from folks in Glendeaden that some folks who had been in the neighborhood about 20 years in a house very close to them. I don't know if it was their neighbor, was converted to a BRD, and the owner introduced themselves and said, anytime you've got a problem with one of my tenants, just call me. The first time they called, the owner came right away, dealt with the situation. Second time they called a few weeks later, oh, gee, I'm sorry, I'm busy, can you go talk to them? And they're saying, I don't want to go talk to people who might be angry and under the influence.
Precisely the situation that
happened
in our neighborhood.
Yeah,
precisely.
And we don't want to put people in the position of doing that. And I think another way of putting what we're discussing here, again, is sometimes you just can't fix stupid. I mean, my all-time favorite story, and I heard a lot of the stories from Rhodes End because I wasn't a commissioner yet, but I was a reporter, covered county government for almost 20 years before becoming a commissioner. One nice warm summer night, this couple who were year-round residents went to bed a little before 1 a.m. The missus says to the mister, "I think I hear splashing in our hot tub. Will you go check?" And he says, no. "Oh, come on, go check, please." And he walks out to the tub and sees two people he doesn't know in the tub and says, "Excuse me." And they say, "Oh, gee, we're staying at the house two doors down. We didn't think anybody was home here," which apparently would have made it all right. So.
Yeah.
Well, and of course, that I always look at it as we look around at the issues we have to deal with are nothing. We could be in Daytona Beach or some of the places.
We don't have spring break.
Spring break or, you know, where you've got a totally different level and intensity of problems.
Probably true. But, no, we're not likely to become poor if we don't have those kinds of
beaches. No, no.
But I have lived in two places that went ballistic for growth, and nobody believed it was coming to our neighborhood because we've always been sleepy, our community.
Yeah.
And one had the foresight to have things in place in case the other didn't and tried to play catch-up. Ketchup doesn't work.
No, it doesn't. But I'm really glad you were here tonight. Well, I'm glad everybody was here, but I mean to hear, just because, as I said, the bulk of the complaints have been coming from one area, but to know, like in Surfland, to go from 1 to 8 within 10 years, that's a sign that this is a potential issue all around the county.
And our latest one was, it's in progress right now, it was a woman owned a home. Her residence for many years. It was a lovely home. She passed. House sold. Tore the house to the ground and put up it's in progress now, a huge 5-bedroom VRD.
Yeah.
And I see this happening more and more. I mean, I that's only what I'm familiar with, but I can envision it happening increasingly. They're going to push the limit on as far as they can go.
Yeah, and that brings up a question. It hasn't come tonight, but in the early stages, a few people came to me individually, and I think they might have talked to Wayne as well. You know, well, couldn't you put further limits on height, setback, overall size? And my initial answer was, much tougher proposition, and especially in Oregon with Major 49. I said, suppose you had somebody who could build, you know, replace their two-bedroom or two-level non-ocean view home with a larger home where the third level would be ocean view, and now we're going to tell them you can't. Well, under Major 49, I think that's a surefire compensation claim, wouldn't you think?
Lawyers Full Employment Act. Lawyers Full Employment Act.
Exactly. Major 49, one of several. So, anyway.
Can I just, because we did ask and did receive a response on the local contact question, just a quick show of hands, would that be a preference that if we do this, it'd be a local contact?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, good.
Yes. Right. Can I add a... It's as important, I'm for local, but the important thing is that this contact person is responsive.
Right, yeah. And see,
so
that would be a potential strike.
A local rental management doesn't necessarily mean, we'll take care of it in the morning. You know, so it's got to
right.
Be,
no,
you
responsive.
Dovetail it into the response time, and then that's,
If they're local but not responsive, then that's a problem. And so,
great.
But it sounds like you've got it all covered.
Anything else?
I would ask that you're mentioning the land use versus business license issue. I would again reiterate what was said in the correspondence. Much of the ordinance, I agree, is business licensing. When you get to occupancy standards, I think you are definitely on thin ice at best versus the land use.
And I appreciate your position.
Legal stuff. It's interesting. So you said, I mean, I'm just so I can take back to my board meeting, that motels and B&Bs have, especially motels at least, have occupancy limits, right?
Yeah, right.
So I can't imagine, now I can imagine that homes don't have occupancy limits. I mean, if you have a huge family in a small house, you're crowded, but the state can't tell you that you can't have a big family in a small house, right?
To some extent.
Isn't there, I mean, like for a number of unrelated persons?
Yeah, there are some provisions of.
And the difference between permanent residence and short-term,
but a vacation rental dwelling is a short-term motel and not a home.
Legally,
that's the $64,000 question. There's a lot of that.
Okay, so
there's a lot of nuances with this. Well, and we'll have more discussions. We will have more discussions about.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to.
But no. I mean, I think you've kind of hit on one of the key questions.
It's a question.
Okay.
I have a couple of comments.
Sure.
With respect to the parking. It says in here, parking shall not, under any circumstances, hinder the path of any emergency vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
I'm all in favor of that.
Great.
Okay. Is this something that can be defined at the time of the licensing process, where somebody says, I'm going to designate this spot for my parking?
That's what we hope to do. You're actually supposed to show us where your parking is. That's what we're intending.
All the ambiguity and uncertainty out.
It does. Exactly. And then, you know, there's obviously, there's provisions for establishment of fire lanes, of no parking areas, those kinds of things. So, I mean, there's going to be some pretty clear-cut ways to look and see, is that being violated? Mm-hmm. There may be some proof issues, you know, in terms of, is that the resident that's next door or the occupant of the VRD? But there are things we can do.
Legal street parking for anybody. Yeah. Exactly. That's one thing that we pointed out to some of the folks who brought this forward. They said, if we're going to have a fire lane or a no, or you're going to have, because it wasn't county roads they were talking about, or a no parking lane, that applies to everybody.
Yeah,
residents as well as guests, and you need to understand that.
And frankly, that will still be the most difficult area to address.
Yeah, and another thing like we talked about is the 4th of July, and folks, you know, guests going wild to celebrate the 4th, and they said, hey, come to my residence in the heart of Newport, and it's cannons are going off there as well. So, you know, again, this is not the, I think we've already touched on this, not going to be the end-all, be-all panacea, but hopefully it gives us some better tools to deal with the problems. And anything else, sir?
Yes.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
The notice that goes out within 250 feet of the VRD as part of the process, it doesn't seem to be, at least I may be mistaken, but I didn't see anything that said how first class mail, is there any kind of proof of service, a declaration, something that says
we'll have something in the application process administratively that will tell you how. In fact, and we can assist with that process too, because we have some things to actually help you with who those neighbors are from assessment records and that stuff.
It would be nice to know that
we did comply. Send out the notice in a standardized postcard, so I get every year 10 or 15, whatever it is.
Oh, so it comes from the city itself?
That's interesting.
Yes.
So we might.
I'll have to look at that. I understood that to be the case.
Because I have these.
Oh, that's interesting.
I put these cards in the drawer, and it has contact information on it, and it's a simple postcard.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that'd be good to know.
Somebody does it, and
I let's check into that way, and that might be. Again.
The city determines who gets notice.
Right.
Then they bill as part of the licensing process, they add it to the bill.
The cost of the notification.
The cost of the licensing.
Excellent.
Standardized.
Okay.
And that way you know it's done, too.
That's true.
Yeah, you don't have to just rely on the word of the owner or manager.
That's the annual one, and then there is one that is whenever there's an application at a different place.
Right.
Okay.
Change of ownership.
Yeah, we'll look at that.
That's actually awesome.
We'll look at that.
Okay.
That's an interesting thing.
All right, some good input.
Yep.
Much appreciated.
I got a couple more comments.
Oh, sure.
I know everybody wants to go home.
No, that's fine. No, please.
There was a lady at the last meeting, well, not the last meeting,
the one in Lincoln City.
And she was saying that the management company, she would call them, they used to respond, and now they never respond.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm that management company.
Oh.
Okay, I know. We know her phone number. I've got phone logs. Okay, we know when she calls and when she doesn't. Okay, she hasn't called in months. And for her to make a comment like that, my question is, what do I do when somebody says they called me and I didn't respond? Okay, is what she said.
Yeah. Well, what
it
you can
didn't
do is
happen that way.
You can, you know, you'd have evidence of that if you have call logs and that kind of stuff. You present your evidence in an investigation. They'd say, "What evidence do you have? You made the call."
Okay. Fair enough.
That's. I mean, it's a fact situation you look into.
Part of the problem will be in a new situation. We know her. We've introduced ourselves to her. We said, "Call us anytime." We always respond.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And but there'll be somebody that'll call, leave a message. No phone number.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What do I do with that? I have no phone. I got a phone log. I don't know who phone number. I can't tie the two together necessarily.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think in an investigation, remember, we got the sheriff's office that's going to be conducting these things. But
they can
help you. Oh yeah, they're going to assist in enforcement. They can assist. I mean, there's ways we can kind of figure something.
Certainly, don't want to bog them down. But
no,
at the same time.
If it gets to that level, you know, if things are going that way, there's ways to deal with it.
Mm-hmm. The last comment I have in this 20-minute complaint response time, it's unrealistic. It's unrealistic. It doesn't mean if we get a call, we won't respond for, we're going to say, it hasn't been an hour yet.
Mm-hmm.
No sense in responding. It's not like that. But as I mentioned at the last meeting,
mm-hmm.
Right now, if you were local reps, good luck responding in 20 minutes. You're not available. And so maybe you're not ideal local reps, but other people are going to be in the same situation from time to time that you're in right now. 20 minutes is not realistic.
What would you say?
I understand why you were suggesting 15, but then I'm thinking, you know, time of day, time of year, amount of traffic.
I was thinking phone call to phone call.
Oh, okay.
Someone visiting the front door.
Oh, okay.
Sometimes it works with phone calls, sometimes
that's true.
Sometimes
yeah.
You don't leave a number.
That's true.
And by the way, getting here to Rhodes End.
Exactly, yeah. Like, say if you're contracting with a Newport security company and they have to get up to Rhodes End. Exactly.
And it's summer.
Yeah. Right.
You can't get...
Right.
Well, and in part, what we've, you know, that's a good question. That's what we wanted to hear, that response time issue is a good one. Yeah. I mean, I sort of like the standard as a reasonable standard. You look at the circumstances in each case.
And you can have two different standards, one for phone contacting.
Okay.
I like that. Interesting.
Yeah. I think, you know, if it's a baseline, an hour is fairly reasonable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Be aware you may not have a number to contact your local Joe from out of Idaho.
Right.
Well, that gives, you know, I think a telephone number to the renter, telephone number from the renter,
mm-hmm.
should be part of the contract. I mean, how can you?
It is part of ours.
If
they make an online reservation, they can use their office number, their
mm-hmm.
home number.
Sure.
But before we confirm the reservation, it's mandatory they give us a cell phone number.
Yeah. Very good.
Okay.
But
that doesn't mean they bring that cell phone with them.
Or they answer.
That's an issue.
Yeah. So
it's over there and they're
mm-hmm.
partying over here.
The thing is right now that you are making up an ordinance for rules,
yes.
licensing thing.
Yes.
And you can put in the requirements that you feel are reasonable and
mm-hmm.
will address the neighborhood's issues.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're going to work in the morning and it's 1 o'clock and the place next door that's, you know, 10 feet away from
mm-hmm.
your bedroom window, this is not just a, you know, inconvenience, this is a problem.
Sure.
So, I mean, think in terms of people who actually live in the neighborhoods.
That is what we're trying to do.
I know.
And I appreciate
it. I'm adding my...
Well, that's
not...
Okay.
I believe
that's
a reasonable
fine.
Standard is
mm-hmm.
better than a fixed standard. It's all the same.
Yeah,
that's...
My comment is meant
yeah.
for that purpose.
Yeah.
Reasonable
sure.
is kind of a drifty word.
But
that's
but
a
it's always
common
term
legal
It's very common to use something like that. Reasonable person standard, so...
If it's the 4th of July, it's
yeah, a reasonable person in 4th of July is going to be, if you can even respond at all, you're lucky. You know, that honestly, it really is.
Yeah.
It's the way the fire department, the police department does it. They can't respond to everything. So.
Yes, my son's a lawyer, and we've had a conversation about these things. And I've had a couple of lectures about reasonable.
Yeah.
But still, we're writing ordinances, and you can do what you can do.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, this is great input.
And Casey, the web page, maybe we should let people know where the audio of the previous meetings, this ordinance, and an opportunity if after you've had the chance to read the whole thing, if you want to give us further feedback by email. Where do they find that on the county website?
That's in the Board of Commissioners section of the website. You can get to it from the county homepage or through departments.
And if you don't have the county website, just Google Lincoln County, Oregon government.
Or Lincoln County, Oregon, BRD.
That'll bring it up soon.
Is there a date yet where you no longer will be taking any more additional comments or...
At this point, you know, that's part of what we'll talk about, you know, on next Wednesday is the next steps. And do we want to, you know, maybe do some more tweaking on the ordinance, mm-hmm. take some more comment on it before we go out?
Will this be the last public hearing?
This is the last of the community meetings before we go back and get some direction from the board. They could ask for more community meetings if they wanted to.
Mm-hmm. Are you asking for input at the council meeting?
We could, yes, if you want to, yes.
Yes.
And, you know, we've got your stuff's in the mm-hmm. record, just so you know that. We do have your stuff in the record.
I don't intend on that.
That's fine.
Okay.
That's fine.
Okay.
But you have time between now also, between now and Wednesday, to also submit additional comments to us. We'll take those. Sure. But Wednesday will be the day when we get some direction about next steps. Where do we go?
Mm-hmm. Do you have a basic timeline? Do you think there will be something in place by summer?
Yeah, we were shooting for that.
We're probably aiming for an effective date of July 1.
There'll be some provisions for timing for when this thing goes into effect, number one, and then number two, a grace period for people to actually apply for licenses.
Yeah.
So if it's passed on July 1st, goes into effect on July 1st, technically then it would be a couple months before you could start registering complaints about...
Yeah. I mean, so I think at this point, it may not fully impact this summer, but it'll be in place for people to plan and do what they need to do by fall.
Yeah. Anything else?
You're going to have a calendar year license. Hmm. It may not be practical to have a July 1st end of year license with a 3-month application grace period.
Well, and we may talk about having an initial license that actually goes for, instead of being a year, the initial license will go for 13 months or 15 months. That's
whatever.
I've been thinking about that too. That we, depending on the timing of
rather
when we do it,
rather than licensed and immediately,
yeah, and have to say you got it. No. We talk about an initial licensing period, but then run the period on a calendar year basis.
After that.
So, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You guys have been thinking.
We have. I mean, about 2 years went into this.
Mm-hmm. I can tell.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you, guys.